Who is the most famous ghost you've ever seen? Do you think people who are loved and revered by the masses long after death have more energy to manifest? Our guest today has seen her fair share of ghosts, but some of those ghosts are of people you've probably heard of. Perhaps it's because she gives ghost tours in one of the most haunted districts in the U.S. Or maybe these particular ghosts like her commitment to ethics and business. Let's hear from Rachel, founder of Vampire Cosmetics, today on Homespun Haints. Hello, hated loves. Welcome to Homespun Haints. I'm Becky.
And I'm Diana.
And today on the show, we are thrilled to bring on Rachel Kleinsmith. She is the CEO of Vampire Cosmetics, and she is also a ghost tour guide and a paranormal investigator with Bloody Mary's in New Orleans. All around, super cool woman. And she has so many stories to tell, and you're going to learn so much about the history of New Orleans today.
But most importantly, she has ghost stories.
And she has a really cool line of cosmetics.
True, true, true.
You're really going to enjoy this. We're having such a great season, Diana.
It's true.
With so many great guests and more in the pike that I can't tell you about yet. You're just going to have to wait and anticipation. But it's coming. It cometh.
Thy help cometh from us.
Speaking of Rocky Horror Picture Show that I just alluded to there, Diana and I actually just got done recording our Patreon episode. If you are a member of our Patreon, please go listen to it. It's all about the phenomenon of the teenage vampire lover.
Sexy, sexy vampires.
And why it's so popular in today's culture and all the sociological implications thereof. And we had a really long talk. So if you're a member of our Patreon, please go check that out.
So spicy.
It's very spicy. That's why we have a Patreon, because there's things we want to talk about that, you know what? That's the only place we can talk about them.
Yeah, it's just too spicy for prime time.
Just too spicy.
But this is not what you're about to tell me, right?
Well, yeah, I think I saw a ghost yesterday. It was just a glimpse.
Just a little ghost.
Well, I've had my own thing following me around for a while now, and I keep thinking I've shaken him. And he keeps coming back. And he looks the same every time I get a glimpse of him.
When you say for a while, are you talking about days, weeks, months, years, or decades?
Years.
Okay.
It's been at least 5 years.
Have I heard about this guy before?
I think so. He's ridden in the backseat of my car a few times with me. He's been like standing in this weird corner of my room. Other people have seen him. I'll be on a Zoom call and someone will be like, "Who's behind you?"
I hadn't connected that this was the same entity, you're experiencing a sense of consistent, specific guy following you. I thought it was just like, oh, there's a ghost around, kind of ambient ghosts.
For a while, I would drive the kids to school and then I would drop them off. And I just had this weird sense that somebody was still in the car. And I would ask him to leave and I would feel drained. I remember one time I asked him to leave and I felt this huge weight off of me, and I actually had trouble getting out of the car. I was shaking so bad.
And this is about the same time frame that you were driving around with a Ouija board in your trunk?
You know, that happens so often, I couldn't really put...
That's what I mean. Like, when you tell these stories to me, I'm just like, oh, ambient Becky ghosts. I don't think of, like, a specific guy.
Right, right. Well, so it happened again last... I thought he was gone. I did, like, this egg cleanse. I worked with tarot readers trying to identify who he was. He's very reticent. He won't tell anybody anything. He's pale. He's a tall, thin, pale white guy. I would say maybe in his 40s.
And it's not hay.
No. This guy is of able mind. He's got light hair, blonde or white, and he's dressed... He's dressed in just really like neutral colors, but it's not like he's ethereal. He's not light because he's light kind of ghosty figure. It's
not just, like Amber's creatures that she was seeing that were all in sepia tones because they weren't coming through in full color.
Right, right. No, this is more of just a like was a pale white dude.
Okay.
And I can't really place his age. Sometimes he seems a lot older, like he might be in his 60s. So he kind of wafts between like 40s to 60s or whatever.
But can ghosts do that? Just identify whatever age they happened to live to?
Or I think so.
Any age below that age?
I think they can choose how they want to appear. So anyway, last night I made the mistake of having a cup of coffee at 9:30 at night.
Oh, Becky.
It was half calf.
You do drink some large amounts of caffeine regularly, don't you? I mean,
well, if I don't, then I get a withdrawal headache.
Yes, that's how drugs work.
Keep up my habit.
All right, so you're a druggie and you were craving your caffeine late at night.
Lady Teal came over. We had gone to a tarot throwdown together.
Yeah, sometimes you gotta take uppers when you're hanging out with people at night, especially when you're our age.
She wanted a cup of coffee and I was like, yeah, I'll have one too. Why not? And I gave her a couple haunted dolls and then I sent her on her way. And
just a couple.
I had two left that hadn't been sold, and she was overjoyed and I was overjoyed to get rid of them. And I had trouble sleeping, and sometimes when I have trouble sleeping, it's easier for me to sleep on the sofa. So I went and curled up on the sofa and just kind of drifting off to sleep. We've talked about that space between sleep and wake where you seem to be more susceptible to things.
That liminal space of relaxation.
Yeah. And I looked at the foot of the sofa and there he was sitting there.
Ooh.
Like at my feet, just kind of looking at me.
If this is anything like your regular stories, you're going to be like, and then I fell asleep.
Yeah.
Damn it, Becky. Why didn't you talk to him?
No. What happened was it startled me.
Oh.
And I was, yeah. I'm like, oh man, I wish I could see more ghosts. Why do I need more content for the podcast? Why don't we ghost? So I'm kind of like drifting off thinking about that. And then I look up and there he is. And there's that like, oh crap.
Did you think there was a man in your house, like a living man?
No, I knew exactly what it was, what he was. It was this like, man, you get what you ask for kind of moment. And I sat straight up and he disappeared.
Aww.
But it was like that heart jumping, you know, where it's like, oh my God.
Yeah, you can't stop yourself from having a knee-jerk reaction when mm-hmm. something startles you. That's normal. That's why jump scares are cheap. That's our natural human response. It's not because we don't actually want the encounter. We just get startled and have a reaction.
Yeah. So that's what happened.
Bummer.
Not before I saw him smile at me, though.
Ooh, like sinister smile?
It was almost like a sly smile. Like, I'm still here.
All right. You're thinking about me. Yes, I'll show myself to you.
Yeah. But it was like he knew he was going to scare me.
Mm.
I don't know. It was, and I was just like, there he was again.
It was his attempt to be spooky, potentially.
I guess. I don't know.
We really need to have like an emergency plan in place, like the hide under your desk for the atom bomb plan. We need a rehearsed reaction to a ghost showing up so we can find a way to like expect it and have like a ingrained reaction that's trained into us.
How do you plan for that?
Well, that's what I mean, like practice.
No, practice with what? Fake ghosts?
I guess you'd have to tell your children to all of a sudden pop up at the foot of the bed in the middle of the night. I bet your son would be into that. Can you randomly scare mommy by showing up under the bed in the middle of the night?
All right, well, we'll try that. We'll let you know if it's successful or not.
Ghost rehearsal.
Yeah. Speaking of ghosts, we already mentioned our Patreon. If you would like to check out the spicy, ghostly content we have on our Patreon, that's at patreon.com/homespunhaints. We're also on YouTube now. We have audiograms and we have bonus episodes that you can hear the audio of them here, or you can go watch us talk about it on YouTube for our bonus episodes. So go check that out at youtube.com/homespunhaints.
It's true. We're as visually entrancing as you think we are.
Yeah, if you just want to watch two purple-haired women talking to each other, some people get into that.
Who doesn't? Your strange ghost man who lurks in the corner obviously does.
Ooh, yeah. Let us know if you ever see him while we're recording.
Oh my gosh. That would be amazing. Meta content.
Wow.
But if you're not one to indulge spectrophilia tendencies, enjoy this commercial.
Today, we are thrilled to bring on Rachel Kleinsmith. She is the founder and CEO of Vampire Cosmetics. You have probably heard of them. And she is also a tour guide and a procurer of paranormal experiences for Bloody Mary's Tours, Haunted Museum, and Voodoo Shop
in New Orleans. She is an all-around spooky woman with so many ghost stories to tell today. We are so thrilled to bring her on. Rachel, thank you so much for being on the show with us.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
So tell us about Vampire Cosmetics and how you got started with that.
I have been interested in makeup as a special interest since I was 13. Mother took me to make a counter at a department store when I was 13 years old and was like, hey, you're old enough to wear makeup now, so we're going to learn how to do it properly. And I basically became addicted to it from there. I love how makeup makes me feel. I like using it as a tool for self-expression. I started selling for an MLM in high school before I was legally old enough to do so.
Oh.
My mom signed up for me so I could do it. And then I ended up coming upon Paula Begun's Beauty Bible and Don't Go to the Hair Care Counter Without Me and a couple other of her books that kind of explain like really how the marketing and beauty industry work and how they're not always honest about the ingredients or their claims. And I started really digging into the cosmetics chemistry and the laws around cosmetics regulation. And I've no longer felt comfortable selling for this company. That combined with the fact that I was, you know, a goth kid wearing black lipstick or even eyeliner as lipstick because we couldn't get black lipstick but around Halloween time at that time period. So I ended up deciding, okay, you know what? When I'm older, I'm going to start my own makeup line. I'm going to do it right. I want to be inclusive and I want to do it ethically and I want to be very transparent about what I do. And when I was pregnant with my first son in 2011, I started my first makeup line. It took about 8 years to become profitable and it exploded overnight. It got really big, really fast, and we did not have the infrastructure in place to really support that growth. So we ended up shutting down and took me a while to get the money up to pay everyone back. And in the process of doing that, people kept saying, when are you going to start selling makeup again? And so I took all the experience from that first makeup line, all my experience in business, and redid everything right this time. We started selling primarily to stores and doing private label for other independent brands. Did a lot of wholesale the first year and a half. And then last year we launched really to the public. And it was a pretty big reception. We did 16 trade shows last year. And I brought on my business partner, Karen, as well last year. We really do that women supporting women thing. We are women owned. We are disabled owned. We are LGBTQ owned. Neurodivergent. Karen has ADD. I am autistic and ADHD. We also are 100% vegan, cruelty free, talc free. And we are very careful about being ethically sourced. Some of the licenses we work with, like Emily Strange, demand that there's certain worker rights and regulations with our manufacturing. And we already complied with that, which is why we're able to do makeup for them when other brands haven't been able to do that.
Nice.
One thing that really struck me about your story is how you had to shut down and then you started up again anyway. You didn't let that just be like, okay, well, I guess that was it. I guess it didn't work out. You were like, nope, we're going to do it again and we're going to do it right. And I think that is amazing. That is really inspiring.
I talked to a bankruptcy attorney when the first company failed and he was like, you're crazy. There's no way you should refund people or still fill old orders from this company that failed. That's insane. And I'm like, how can you not though? Like, I was a small business. This wasn't my intention here. I've got to make things right before I can move forward. There's no way around it. And I knew cosmetics. I've been doing it for 10 years at the point when we relaunched with Vampire Cosmetics. And I've always loved vampire stories. And I've always liked history and ghost stories and spooky things. That's a lot of the focus. But I couldn't live with myself. That's why we really do try to walk the talk as far as like women supporting women, businesses, women supporting women, and whatever we can do. And also being ethical on all fronts, being transparent on all fronts.
Rachel, on top of running this amazing business and having done it twice, basically, and you have all of these partnerships that you have going on, you have a collection that you're partnering with the Winchester Mystery House coming out. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this is another one that I really like the ethics of as well. We really want to be careful with who we sell to in a retail environment. Sarah Winchester was honestly a really lovely lady. There's some people who will dispute the history of the house, even though the official Winchester Mystery House does talk about the ghosts and does talk about the history, because Sarah believed it herself and she wrote about it extensively. She ended up taking responsibility for something that wasn't her fault, what happened with the Winchester rifle and people dying, feeling guilty for it. And that kind of played out in a very dramatic way across her life with her building and spending all of her husband's money. But she put that money into the community. She hired so many people and she paid them the double rate plus room and board to continue building this house. So it wasn't just her and this elaborate, crazy labyrinth of a house that she built that she was benefiting from. No, she paid people well. She took care of them like family. And the community still in San Jose still really loves and appreciates her memory for how she treated people individually. The number 13 is featured a lot in the house. She used the number 13 a lot in the house, like 13 hooks, 13 windows, 13 this. Like, there's a lot of it. And that's like their number. So we want to definitely incorporate that as far as like number of shades, little hidden Easter eggs. We love putting Easter eggs in our products. We like having like little hidden things. We're working on a three-dimensional house palette.
What?
It's going to be multiple layered, and you're going to be able to pull back certain parts to get to certain shadows. You'll see different parts of the house, different parts of the architecture based on where you're looking at it from. And I think that's going to be really fun for people. We also have some smaller designs, pen-shaped lipsticks, eyeliners, and mascaras that have her signature on it, and the 100th anniversary logo, and some things that incorporate some of the architectural elements of the house people like the spider web windows. We're launching that in June. There's going to be a party at the house. There's going to be a seance. There's going to be a whole bunch of stuff going on as we get closer to that time period. We haven't even released any pictures yet of the products that are coming out. So once we do, I'm sure people are going to be interested and surprised.
I'm excited for a makeup palette that has secret passageways. That's everything I've wanted in makeup.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, no, we believe in the whole package.
You said there was going to be a seance as part of your launch. What do you mean?
I mean, we're going to have a seance at the launch party. At the Winter
Treehouse. Like, for the public? Yeah. Everybody invited? Or are you just going to televise?
Like a limited capacity, depending on where we do it in the house. There is a seance room in the house that Sarah herself used. We're also working on a spirit board palette for Winchester as well, because they requested that specifically. Because they do seances. They have seances there. My friend Patty, who I've worked with for many years, Patty Negri from Ghost Adventures, a bunch of TV shows, she does seances there. And yeah, Bloody Mary does seances too at her haunted museum in New Orleans as well. It's kind of a recurring theme for us. I've done them a lot. Very safe. It's not like scary people see on TV, but it's a thing. They're effective. They really work.
Well, let's talk about some of your ghost stories.
Okay. My business partner lives on what used to be Winchester Mystery House property, like a couple blocks from the current house. The original property was much larger, obviously. Part of where her orchard was is where my business partner's house is. She still has some orchard trees in her yard. So Sarah shows up sometimes at the house. She told me this or had alluded to it. And in fact, I encountered Sarah. I saw a shadow of this tiny framed woman with kind of like a hat from a time period in the kitchen, like at 5 a.m. when I was trying to reheat food on the stove because Karen doesn't have any modern appliances for the most part. Like she does, but she doesn't. Like a lot of them break for some reason.
Oh.
Which I told her, like, make an altar because like if this is Sarah coming to visit, ghosts need energy. Start leaving out food. Start leaving out offerings and see if it helps with the appliances getting drained and breaking. But yeah, I saw her shadow while I was reheating food at 5 o'clock in the morning. Like, it was definitely like her. We've seen pictures of her, of course, and it very much looked like that. She didn't walk all the way in the kitchen. She was in the hallway and then gone the next second. There was no one else awake in the house but me. And it was very clear. She definitely still walks around her property grounds. People have lots of ghost stories from the house itself. They talk about it on their tours there. It's one of the top 10 tourist destinations in the country. And they've done a fabulous job at like really telling her story and keeping that legacy going. I think it's really cool. Now I'm back in my hometown of New Orleans. I was in Los Angeles for 7 years. I'm working for Bloody Mary, who owns Bloody Mary Tours, Haunted Museum and Voodoo Shop. She is initiated and a priestess in 4 different traditions of voodoo, including New Orleans voodoo and the tradition of Marie Laveau. And the tours that we do, it's a very small family-owned company, are all combination tours and paranormal experiences, whether it's a van tour or a walking tour around New Orleans. And they're all kind of long. They're all pretty in-depth compared to some of the other companies here. The Haunted Museum includes things from Marie Laveau's house that were personal effects, like her pistol with her name engraved on it. It's got a skull from the catacombs in Paris. It's got a bunch of haunted dolls, and there's some children inside that are ghosts from both the property itself, because it's over 200 years old. The house is over 200 years old. It was originally a single family home. There is the former slave quarters out back where the exterior kitchen was. It's now a garden. And there's some kids there who died of yellow fever. There's some kids who came from the abandoned charity hospital where I was born. There's some kids who came from the Cabrini Orphanage after Mary acquired the poor box from Cabrini Orphanage. And there's also just some other passerbys or people who came attached to like the wheelchair from Charity Hospital. There's a nurse I spoke to the other night who wanted to talk to me about the lies that had been said about Charity Hospital and how it closed. And I told her, you know, yeah, I know the truth. I was born there. It's very important to me. The hospital was closed because of politics. And there's a big documentary out on it. It's not really a secret anymore, but I guess she died shortly after Katrina. She said she was there during Katrina when I asked her. We were using a combination of ovulus and dowsing rods to speak with this nurse. And there's actually videos on Mary's social media pages that show this wheelchair moving around by itself, like completely by itself with the ghost box sitting inside of it, you know, the radio thing. It's completely moving on its own autonomously. But yeah, I had the conversation with this nurse. I asked her, I'm like, hey, are you a nurse? Did you work at Charity Hospital? I said, yes. I said, did you die at Charity Hospital? Yes. Were you there during Katrina? Yes. All these questions. And then it popped up with lies. And I said, yeah, I know what happened. It's on the obvious, said lies. And then I explained what I just explained to y'all about how they chose to close it down because they had just gotten approval for a new hospital before Katrina happened, but they didn't have approval for the funding. So they decided to use the FEMA money and the insurance money to try and fund the new hospital. And this is really sad because Charity was a free hospital. It was free. It did not cost anything. If you didn't have money, you didn't pay. They didn't care if you didn't have insurance. They had the best doctors in the world. And they also had a really excellent rehab and mental health program, all of which everywhere in this country is lacking now, but New Orleans especially. It's been a city of a lot of dualities. The income disparity in the city is extreme, much like in Los Angeles. It's only gotten worse over time. So the loss of Charity is a huge loss for the community. And in fact, during Katrina, they didn't actually evacuate them. They left the patients there with the nurses and doctors to stay behind voluntarily to care for them. The most critically ill patients who couldn't be moved, obviously, on life support. They were like manually pumping life support 2 weeks after Katrina happened. The water was still high and it ended up being private citizens who came in and got them out in boats because the helicopters came for Tulane across the street, but didn't come for Charity. They were just considered disposable. And the nurses and doctors who stayed behind to take care of these patients, you know, voluntarily, ended up coming back in afterwards and cleaning up because it's a million square feet of concrete real estate built in the 30s. It's been there for almost 100 years, and it only sustained a limited amount of damage. There was flooding in the basement, and then there was some broken windows on one of the upper floors. That's it. So they came in there. They grabbed this fire brigade from Germany who happened to be in town helping pump out the Superdome basement. To come over, pump at the basement, they went and they cleaned it top to bottom. It was ready to go. It was ready to open. And they got the call, get out. So they were doing medicine out of tents and eventually a department store for months because none of the hospitals around, aside from Charity, could reopen. And they chose not to reopen it. And people were dying because of this choice even after the storm and are still suffering to this day because of this choice. And then after I explained what I just explained to you, I know the story. She's like, okay, good, research. It said research on the ovulus right afterwards. So it's confirmation of that. Then I had to go back upstairs and check on people who were upstairs in the apartment. But it was kind of surreal because, like, I'm like, immediate confirmation, immediate response.
So you communicated with her through the ovulus and with dowsing rods. Have you had other experiences besides seeing Sarah Winchester where you've just seen a ghost, like, with your eyes?
Oh, yeah. Not as often. I also saw Marie Laveau's spirit one night 5 years ago, walking past where her house was towards where Congo Square was in Louis Armstrong Park. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning, and I was in town during October for an event. And that's one of the ones that I've saw that was full flesh manifestation. Those are super rare. Shadows are obviously much more common. Glimpses, corner of your eye kind of stuff. Full flesh manifestations are really rare for anyone, no matter how sensitive you are. And not everyone experiences them the same way, and not every ghost can appear the same way either. Like, some ghosts full on touch you. Some ghosts can move objects. Some ghosts can only talk on the dowsing rod. They don't really have the energy to talk through the ovulus. Some ghosts, you can hear them if you have that sense. Some people can see them. There's a lot of variance on both sides with how they can communicate and also how we can perceive them.
So tell us about seeing Marie Laveau. That must have been incredible.
It was a double take situation for sure, but I wasn't alone in the car. I was there with my ex-husband and my best friend, and we all saw her.
So you were driving by?
We were driving by, yeah.
And you saw her just standing there?
We saw her walking from in front of her house towards Congo Square.
Whoa. Does she look like her picture?
Yes. And you can kind of tell. I don't know if you guys have seen like a full flesh manifestation before, but it looks like a person standing there, right? But like, there's also something off. There's like, you can tell kind of like, but not, it's more of a feeling that makes you realize it's a spirit. Plus she was there 1 second and gone the next. Like it's kind of a feeling, but visually it's definitely like a double take situation because it's so rare to see that. But we knew immediately who she was. There was no question.
describe the feeling for us. What clued you in? What kind of feeling did you get?
I don't know how to describe that feeling. It's not really a negative feeling. It's not like a fear kind of thing. It's more just like a full body awareness. Because I feel like they're not occupying the same space-time continuum that we are. They're kind of in another one. And there's crossover, obviously, because we share sort of a physical world that has different pieces to it that can kind of tune in at certain times. And Marie, honestly, I mean, she's had the most visited grave in the world for a long time. People come and they can't see it anymore the way they used to because the Archdiocese kind of locked it down. But people still come and make the pilgrimage to come ask her for favors and talk to her and ask for her help from all over the world. And they come to her house now and leave offerings or to the altars around the French Quarter like we have in the museum instead of her tomb now, because her tomb you can't get to, or if you can get to it, it's through a specific tour company that works with the Archdiocese, and you can't leave offerings or mark the X's anymore. I feel like people have kind of started gravitating towards her home. And this is around the time period that shift began. And I think it makes sense that she could appear in that capacity much more easily than some spirits can, because she's still very much kept alive with her stories and people following her and asking for her help, like they did in life.
So you said that you usually see shadows. I didn't know if you meant you personally or people, but I assume that you've seen some other spirits where it's more of just a glimpse or a shadow, something of that nature. Can you tell us some of those experiences?
Sure. As far as hearing spirits, I haven't had that happen to me since I was a little kid until recently. I was used to hearing in the museum talk through the ovulists, and suddenly I was hearing this man's voice whispering in my ear, and then I was hearing his voice in the other room very clearly, and I wasn't the only person. Some of our guests who were on the tour did too. A couple nights ago, hear him talking. And unfortunately, I have auditory processing issues because of my autism with people who are talking in real life. So it doesn't get any better with the ghosts. I couldn't understand him. I heard the voice. I still couldn't make out what the words were because my auditory processing issues, but I heard it very clearly. Also, Mary's House. It's a top 10 destination on Ghost Adventures. When the Ghost Adventures crew went there, you know how they normally lock themselves in for the night and kick you out? They called her back 45 minutes later. They lasted 45 minutes in her house. She showed back up after they called her. They were all standing on her porch, refusing to go inside until she held their hands and took them back inside. Someone ended up kind of daring something less than savory to come through when she was opening the gates for them. And I think he got what he asked for. He said there were books flying off the shelves, that there were things rattling on shelves, that he came across like this weird boar creature in the bathroom, like man boar thing. I don't know. Which Mary's like, I don't even know what that could be because I don't have anything like that. She has a bunch of ghosts that she knows are there. Some came with the house, some came with her, some came with the artifacts that she has. She has a voodoo temple in her home. Mary's family's been here since 1718, which is the year the city was founded. So she makes the joke that she's related to half the ghosts in town, but no, she really is. The mansion that became the Lawlery Mansion was actually given to Mary's great aunt by like times 10 back, like 10 greats. And it was originally part of the Ursuline Convent property at that time period. Yeah. And she ended up deciding not to live there, ended up selling it to Delphine McCarty right before she got married to Dr. Lawlery, her third husband. So there is kind of a weird family connection. The Lawlery story really stands out because it was against the law. And it was against the principles of the time. And it was against all common sensibilities. It was shocking to everyone around. And people tried to warn about her. And she's only there for 2 years. She was only in this house for 2 years before she was caught and then fled to Paris. But she was never held accountable, partially because of the corruption in power at the time. And there's always been that disconnect between the people in power here in the city and the people itself. And the majority of our stories that we tell, there's a lot of nuance here that is hard to recognize, that we educate on. Because if you're not from here, it becomes very difficult to understand. But the people who we consider heroes are not necessarily people everywhere else would consider heroes. Like Marie Laveau, like Jean Lafitte. They're people who did good for the community, or Père Antoine. People who helped people out on a human level. We don't really care about money. New Orleans doesn't care about celebrity in the same way that, like, say, LA does, you know, or New York or other places does. We don't care about those things. It's always been hard to live here, but especially early on, we were 80% swamp, hot, gross, no air conditioning, mosquitoes, mosquito-borne illnesses, a port city, so we're getting diseases from everywhere else too. It was really hard, and we had a really high death rate. And I think that's part of why, and that combined with the different cultural influences is part of why there's so much focus on community even now. Because what happens when things go to hell? What happened during Katrina? You have prisoners and OPP standing up to their necks in water. You have Charity Hospital up completely abandoned and never reopening since then. We cannot rely on the people in power. We cannot rely on our government. We have to rely on each other. And I think that's really beautiful that we get to communicate that to outsiders.
You mentioned the Ursuline Convent, and I know that's one of the most famous vampire stories out of New Orleans. And you're a vampire cosmetic. So for those people that aren't familiar with that story, would you like to tell it and then also tell us what you know to be the truth behind it, if it differs from what you typically hear on tours?
Yeah, so we don't tell that story in the way that a lot of tour guides do, because unfortunately it is almost entirely fiction. And I do love vampires. And I do believe that if there are vampires and they are real, they are probably here. I do think that. But unfortunately, pretty much all of the New Orleans vampire stories are pretty easily debunked. On our tours, on Mary's tour specifically, everything is historically based, independently researched, based on as much as we can possibly back up through historical records, baptism records, whatever, on top of firsthand experiences. So I'm going to tell ghost stories that either myself or Mary has seen firsthand, obviously. But I'm not going to go and tell whatever version of history has been twisted the last 200 years. Obviously, we weren't there. I wasn't there in 1834. I don't know why they let Madame Delphine Lellerie go, but they let her go. She got away. But we know that did happen. So as far as Ursuline Convent is concerned, the way we frame it is, I mean, it's a haunted building. It really is. In the attic, there are archives. Mary's been up there. My friend Marita, who runs Boutique de Vampire, who also carries our makeup, and the Vampire Cafe and Potions Lounge, has also been up there. There's ghosts of nuns and things like that. But the reason why this story got propagated the way it did is because of the death rate that we had that was so crazy. And people didn't know at the time what was causing people to die so quickly. They didn't understand cholera is a result of lack of modern plumbing and not having the cleanliness that we have now. Yellow fever, malaria, obviously mosquito-borne illnesses, which is kind of like a vampire. They're sucking your blood and giving you a disease. Tuberculosis was often called the vampire disease because people actually, in the late 1800s, you know, in both in Europe and in New Orleans, started painting their faces white and like making their lips red to kind of mimic blood. And their faces were gaunt looking, the smoky around their eyes, the sallow cheekbones. And it kind of turned vampires into a fashion trend. We had like that vampire literature going on in Europe as well as America at the time. And they believed that the demon that was causing the disease would pass them over if they looked like they already had the disease. But the Ursuline Convent girls, they came here very, very, very early. I think most records show it was 1706 and 1719. I don't think these stories about casket girls started going around until the 1800s, from best of my knowledge. And they were called the Filles de la Cassette, which just means girls with cases in my bad French accent. But the word casquette in French, I think, refers to a food item. It's got nothing to do with casquettes. It's not a French word in that capacity at all. I don't know where it got twisted into this. But also, these girls were actually married before they got to New Orleans. So they would have arrived after a 6-month journey and arrived in Biloxi or Gulfport, Mississippi at different points. And they would have been married before they even got to the city. So they weren't showing up and staying at the convent. They weren't showing up and hanging out with the nuns. They were married off in arranged marriages to help populate the city because it was pretty much a sausage fest. There was all dudes here with military dreams of like building a port city on the mighty Mississippi. And it didn't go as well as they planned. But they were just coming to marry these guys and make families. That's all they were doing. But they were already married before they got here. And that's what most of the tour guides leave out. They want to say, oh, they came to New Orleans. They really didn't, though. They really weren't here in that capacity. They were already married women. They were already with their families. And so that kind of unravels the whole thing right there, unfortunately.
And so what is the real story behind the haunting there, though?
It's just that it's an old building. It's one of the top three oldest buildings in the French Quarter. Most of the buildings in the French Quarter are actually Spanish, which is the irony of it. Because after the second fire happened, you know, the first fire destroyed 100 buildings. The second fire destroyed 200 more buildings. So 1,000 buildings overall were destroyed between 1788 and 1794. And during this time, we were under Spanish rule. And they changed the building codes for the French Quarter. They, instead of having the traditional Creole brick in between post-construction like Lafitte's has, or Madame John's Legacy, which is sadly in great disrepair at the moment because they hired a shoddy construction company to do some repairs. And now they've halted all construction on it. It's very sad to look at. Those two are good examples of the old Creole style. Everything else, aside from, and there's some comments, much bigger structure, so it doesn't really count. It's older, but not the same style. is Spanish. And it's this whole Mississippi mud brick covered in plaster. The houses are all very close together. They're up against the sidewalk. It kind of creates a natural firewall. And that's the majority of the French Quarter architecture you see now.
Okay. So it was to help prevent fire in a way.
Yeah.
I see. Okay. So is it true that, I know one of the things they say on the tour is that the windows on the attic floor of the convent are bolted on the outside.
They're not.
Is there any truth to that? No.
It is not. Okay. No, it's just archives up there. Like I said, the girls were never up there. Their cases were never up there. That never happened. I think they were just making a story up about how, well, these girls, they heard rumors about them coming to New Orleans and people are dying in the streets and their blood is drained because they've got all kinds of diseases and families are dying overnight. It's like Madame John's legacy, right? It's one of the older buildings as well, like I just said. We talk about how in the Interview with the Vampire TV show, the original movie with Tom Cruise, you talk about how the scene where there's the speaker over and it's talking about how Lestat liked to finish off entire Creole families by himself, and you see five coffins being carried out of this house. That's Madame John's legacy. So it's a fictional scene, but an actual historical thing people would see. They would definitely have families, entire families dying overnight. And so while it gets attributed to things like vampires, it was really just disease. I wish it was true.
You say that you believe if vampires exist, they would definitely be in New Orleans.
I believe if they exist, which I definitely think is possible. I have never personally encountered a vampire. I imagine if I did, I probably wouldn't live to tell the tale. But I do think that if they were anywhere, they'd probably be here. And I have friends who've had weird firsthand experiences, like from the 90s to now, waking up at like strange houses in the French Quarter where like they don't know how they got there. And like there's some weird stuff going on. These people seem like otherworldly and like maybe there's vampires, maybe there's not. But I can't corroborate any of that. And I haven't personally experienced it. So, like, if the vampires are around, they're probably here. But unfortunately, the stories that we have that have a historical context, unfortunately, don't hold up.
Getting back to the fact that you work in Mary's haunted location, what is it like emotionally having that be your hub, a place where you spend a lot of time, knowing that you're probably going to run into spirits and have spirit communications at random when you're not expecting it? How does that work with your brain and your mood and things like that?
Well, working with Patty over the last few years, something I learned is that genuinely most people on the other side, even if they're dead, like they're okay. They're not in pain. They're not suffering. They're not like having a bad time. They're just dead. A lot of them stick around for different reasons. And that really helped a lot. And also learning about how spirits communicate and that a lot of times people feel fear, not because they should be afraid, but because it's kind of startling on both sides. Like, they're probably just as shocked if you see them as they see you. Like, it's both sides. Like, they're like, how can you see me? Or what's going on? Like, they're probably not used to that. And so you're probably at some points definitely feeling their fear as well, especially if you're any kind of empathic or psychic person. But also, like, it's just unknown. It's not something we're used to experiencing. So not every bad feeling is a malevolent intention. Sometimes it's just a miscommunication, or it's their own fear or their own stress or their own like trauma that you're getting that kind of like vibe from. And it's not got to do with their intentions towards you at all.
I did want to talk to you a little bit about some of your experiences in Kansas. You said that you lived in Atchison, Kansas for a while, which is a very haunted town. Mm-hmm. And I know we've heard of this town from some of our other guests in the past as well. Can you tell us about a few of your experiences that you had there?
Sure. Okay. So 2010, before I had kids, we were walking around in the middle of the night, decided to break into this abandoned building that was a former school. It was an elementary school my ex-husband went to, and I was there with him and his friends. We get inside, and like there's this immediate feeling of like run. And we had this cat follow us from a few blocks away. It's like a little kitten, little black kitten followed us. We get into the building and it refuses to go inside. So we leave it outside with one of our friends and we go inside the building. And I get inside and I just keep getting like flashes of cats being injured and like freaking out. Like, why is this happening? Why am I seeing this? Like, this shouldn't be a thing. And then I see an asbestos sign and I'm like, okay, I'm going to leave now because this just feels really horrible. I think we went like to the locker room or something in the backside. It was like with a bathroom or something. And it just felt really, really menacing. and it had already been broken into. The door was like open. It was just like a slot between two boards that somebody else had already gone into. It's pretty common out there for abandoned properties just to be open access. There's no trespassing signs, so we're not breaking any laws actually, but we were there. We start walking home after we leave this building, which is like really just feels bad. And on the way home, our friend goes and runs ahead towards his house to go get a crate for the cat so we can take it home in the car and like get it to a vet and stuff and get checked out, because it clearly wanted to come with us. It was a little black kitten, and we're holding on to the kitten. My husband and I are standing in the street, and we look back behind us, and there is a shadow panther in the intersection of the street behind us. Like, definitely not a dog, definitely not a cat, the size of like a large dog, but like cat shaped, with a flicking tail. Definitely the body, the motions of a big cat, but it was all black. So I'm guessing panther because it was a shadow, but it could have been, I guess, a different kind of big cat. It was a shadow creature. It was like a shadow man, but like a panther. We both see it and stop and just stare. At this point, there's two cars that go behind it, and it kind of disappears in the light and then like reappears as they go past. And then it just kind of sits down on its hind legs and stares at us for what feels like forever, right? Because we're not going to move. It's not going to move. We're not going to move. And then it gets up, turns around, and walks away down the street it came from. And we watch it walk away.
Wow. Do you think that was related to the kitten that you just picked up?
I think so. And I hate to say it, but it's honestly a really common thing in Kansas. I had countered a lot of people growing up, a lot of kids growing up who tortured animals for fun. It was very common in that area, and I don't know why. Oh. And obviously, I hated it. I hated being around it. It really upset me. And you've also heard lots of stories of people doing that kind of thing in these kind of properties that are abandoned and going in there and like torturing and killing cats and things. So my guess is something like that had happened, and this animal had like come sort of like as a spirit guide to watch and make sure we were going to take care of the cat, which we did. That town is not at all wholesome. These stories are not good. It does not feel safe. It does not feel like you can communicate with these spirits.
Okay, so I shouldn't go visit Atchison, Kansas to experience the haunting there, is what you're saying.
You want to, but I'd be very careful because the town wants to trap people, which anyone who lives there will tell you that, whether they believe in the paranormal or not. They will tell you that. It's a very common thing. People say, oh, yeah, you can visit once, you'll get stuck there. I'm serious.
Rachel, these were fantastic stories. I am so thrilled that you're able to share so much with us, not just of your own experiences, but also some amazing history. You've been listening to Rachel Kleinsmith, who is the CEO and founder of Vampire Cosmetics, and
tour guide and paranormal investigator for Bloody Mary's Tourist Haunted Museum and Voodoo Shop.
So if people are visiting New Orleans, they should definitely check that out.
Yes.
Can they request you specifically as a guide?
Yes. BloodyMary'sTours.com or BloodyMaryNola.com is the booking site. And I primarily do walking tours in the French Quarter, but I also do a van tour once a week. The van tour is like 3-4 hours long. It's like the whole New Orleans. You go to like all the cemeteries. You get to walk around in some cemeteries at night. We go to by Bloody Mary's house. We go to City Park, see like what's left of St. John's Bayou and by the Dueling Oak, which City Park is part of the original Allard Plantation. And there's this oak tree that's here. It's really haunted, where a bunch of duels used to take place.
And Vampire Cosmetics can be found at a variety of locations, as well as your website.
We're in over 120 independent stores around the world, as well as hottopic.com. And our main website is vampirecosmetics.com, vampire spelled with a Y, Y-R-E.
Well, Rachel, this has been so amazing talking to you. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your stories with us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
And Haunted Loves, have you been to New Orleans to experience any of these locations? Have you believed any rumors that may have been degraded through the telephone line for the last 200 years? Or are you a real vampire who wants to make a connection? Let us know. And in the meantime, have a spooky day.
Homespun Haints is hosted by Becky Kielimnik and Diana Doty and produced by Homespun Haints Media LLC. Editing and music by Becky Kielimnik. Show notes by Diana Doty. If you have a ghost story and you'd like to be considered as a guest for this podcast, please visit our website at homespunhaints.com/submit.